to everyone. It's a pleasure to be here to moderate this table on a subject which I think it's very interesting and very important for me, research and education, emerging licensing platforms. As an introduction, a 1 minute and a half introduction, I would like to say that in the law school where I teach in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, we have a project we call collaborative notebooks, and it consists in the following. It's a law school, and the law course in Brazil takes 5 years. And for all subjects in these 5 years, professors made class material. And this class material is available in our website for students, but not only for students, also for everybody who's interested in reading these class materials. More than that, we have also, in some subjects like intellectual property, which I teach, we recorded the videos. We recorded the classes. And the videos are also available. So students have no excuse to say, I was traveling, I could not attend to the class. Well, if he had an internet connection, he could have read the class material and he could have watched the video. And we also have students' notes. Of course, we give extra points for that because that's currency in classroom. But for volunteers who want to take notes of the classes, they can take notes of the classes and upload them. This material is all available to anybody. You don't need a password. You don't need a login name. We think this is important to spread knowledge, and we think this has to be free so anybody can have access to this material, because we don't think that the most important thing is to hide knowledge, but we think that when we spread knowledge, we can help other people use this material. And if you know how to use this material well, this is what matters. It's not the material itself, it's how to use it. This is just an introduction to show that you can have free platforms with free material when concerns education. I will start. I will just change here the order of speakers. And I will start with Professor Fernando Barrio here. He's from the Universidad Nacional de Río Negro in Argentina. So please, Fernando. 10 minutes.
Good morning. Today I took off my Che Guevara shirt that I was wearing yesterday. So let's try to be a little more technical and to see. I just will try to talk about what the problems are and what are the problems that copyright can create, or the solutions that copyright can give to the open access or to the spread of research and education information. And then I assume that my guest members of the panel, who know probably a little bit more than me, and this will probably go further in the technical aspects. So the first thing that we need to address is what is the situation that we have. As for those of you who have left university too many years ago and probably are too busy running companies or countries, the situation is you all still remember that the new scientific production is needed and needs to be communicated. The scholars, on the other hand, we may have very good ideas for many things, but we are almost worthless in principle if we cannot publish what we think, and for that we need the publishers. The publishers have always have a very important role in the spread of scholarly communications. And then enter internet. The problem is a little deeper than internet, because while we clearly need the publishers because they carry out the selection process, the peer review process, and put in order what we write, and I'm referring mainly to academic journals, although the same applies to book and other forms of publication. And they have a very well-established business model, which is based solely in copyright. They need the copyright as it is in order to survive, and scholars need the publishers in order to get to be known, to get promoted, and then to get more research funds, to keep doing research and so on. What's the problem with that? Well, probably one of the main problems with that is that most research that we do is already paid by all of you. In most countries in the world, including in the most ultra-capitalist, most serious research is done with public funding. Therefore, the public pays once for the research and then has to pay again to access the result of that research. So we may have some fairness issues there, and somebody might be paying twice for things that probably has right to do. That is one of the problems. The other problem that this scheme have is that although in most jurisdictions it is understood as a professor's privilege, the fact that the copyright on things that are written by professors in universities are invested upon them, if you were employee of a different company, the situation would be otherwise. So the university pays the teacher to do some research, and then the university has to pay it again to access the journal that published with professor that they already paid published the work. So we are seeing a situation here where the professors, and I'm a scholar, so I'm shooting myself on the foot, I understand this, but we as scholar get paid to do something, and then the same people that pay us have to pay to see what we are doing, which is a little strange situation. Now, the problem increases or gets even more complicated when we add the international arena, because, as you probably have guessed, one of the ways to getting many of the countries of this world out of their underdeveloping situation is through access to knowledge. And it is quite difficult for many researchers in developing countries to access to the production, to the scientific production that is produced in developed countries because of the higher fees that the university will have to pay to access the journals. The things get even worse when the scholars from developing countries publish in developed countries' journals, and then by no means their universities can access to them. So what is the solution for this situation in which knowledge is produced using important research funds and then it's very difficult to access to the result of that research? Well, the first thing that we have to make clear is there is no way until now, we don't know exactly how to replace the place that the publishers have in this scheme. So it shouldn't be a good idea to think, oh, we just get rid of the publishers. I think that we should probably do is try to find a different task for them and to keep them as a necessary part of this equation. It's not a coincidence that there are almost no lawsuits for copyright infringement between publishers and scholars. There are few. It is true, there are few. One famous in UK and one famous, I think, is still ongoing in the United States between the main publishers and University of Georgia. But it is not normal because our relation is quite symbiotic. We depend on the publisher, the publishers depend on us. So we normally, except you are in the music business, you don't sue your users. It's something important to remember. And therefore, scholars and publishers have a good relation. However, this relation is taking a turn that is not achieving what we need to achieve. So one of the options that people thought, well, you probably have heard about the so-called green pass and the gold pass. The green pass is when the publisher publishes some journals, they give you a copy. They give a copy to the one that wrote each article, and then you put those copies in a repository, the hard copy in a repository, so people that have access to that repository can get them. That will be the green pass. The golden pass is you put them on internet and most people can access it. It's a little more expensive and the publisher will say, where's the money for me? Therefore, we have to think about different options. Let's imagine that we go for the clearly open access, that we put all our scholarly work in open repositories in internet, that there are many. So I write something and instead of sending it to a publisher, I just put it in some place. Who checks that my work is worth? So when the student or a junior researcher is checking my work, how does he or she know that what I wrote is worth or is just some baloney that I decide to do in some crazy night in the northern Patagonia, as most are in the northern Patagonia? But so we still will need the peer review process, and we have to find a solution for that. Even if we find a solution for that, one of the big problems is, okay, let's imagine that I write a very important piece of work. It is properly peer reviewed, and we put it in a repository. How do we track how many times my work is cited? Because your work is worth, not only because a few, normally friends, who are peer reviewing said that it's worth, if one other scholar who have no clue who you are said, look, this is so good that I need quoted. I cannot say this in a better way, so I will quote it. So how do you track citations? Well, that is where publishers enter into the business. I think that we should move to a system where through a particular licensing regime, not model, remember, for those of you that have the unfaithful moment of being here yesterday when I was talking, I don't believe that we have to move to licensing model, but licensing regimes where different levels of development and income should attract different type of licensing. But we should move to one where those who are in the bottom of the pyramid, especially from income, I'm talking about society and country, have different access, almost free access, and the publishers make their money by counting what we are doing with our work. Statistics is something that still needs to be done, and somebody has to do it, and probably the repositories we are putting will not be able to do it. We can talk about meta tagging that somebody will have to do, so when somebody downloads the work that we put in the free repositories, we know who is downloading and then how it's going to use it. I'm not talking about the big brother checking what you are doing with my papers, because I know what you will be doing, but will not be polite to say that here. But I clearly think that the way forward in this will be to look for a new business model for the publishers. We will not be able to afford to have a system excluding the publishers, but still we need a system that keeps quality control and at the same time give access, especially to those universities that have already paid for what is being published, and for developing countries that probably access to knowledge is one of the few ways to getting out of the underdeveloping situation they are. Thank you.
Thank you, Fernando. We are going now to listen to Mr. Jiagong Zhong. He's director of Copyright Information Center in Korea's Copyright Commission, Seoul, Korea.
Good morning. I am Jiagong Zhong of Korea Copyright Commission. First, I would like to express my gratitude toward WIPO for inviting me to the global meeting. Last month, University of Oxford announced the result of annual broadband study, South Korea tops the broadband leadership ranking for the second year in a row, as it proves it's the world's best broadband quality. For example, downloading the 90-minute long movie file, which is about 700 megabytes, only takes about 3 minutes in South Korea. This shows the fact that South Korea's internet environment for distributing digital content is far developed. Since this kind of internet environment, digital content distribution with online service provided as a medium is well vitalized in South Korea. Ministry of Culture, Sports and Tourism and KCC is working on diverse businesses to block the transaction of pirated content. Meanwhile, we put our efforts for establishing legal content exchange market. The top of today's presentation is one of the projects that KCC is recently pushing ahead to make legal content distribution market. First, changes and problems of copyright industry. As digital era develops, the forms of copyrighted works become digitalized, and as copyright distribution channels become diverse, policies of protecting copyright needed to be changed for keeping pace with it. In other words, existing policies focusing on crackdown on piracy are switching over to the policies for carrying out the utilization of copyright works. Yet, systematic management of intellectual property, including copyright, has become the important fact. For invigorating industry, the lack of systematic collecting and managing of complex copyright information has led to the disputes between copyright holder and the service provider. As copyright holder and the service provider make license contact separately, it also brought the problem of generating the excessive cost. In this context, KCC established the following visions and strategies of digital copyright exchange market. Firstly, as we revised the copyright law last July, we set up digital copyright exchange market, which is in charge of building and managing a copyright information system within KCC under the revised copyright law. And the digital copyright exchange market with vision to enlarge the foundation of copyright industry distribution is managing and distributing copyright information systematically by providing various services to the user. Next is about this copyright exchange market's function. This copyright exchange market is planning following six functions: establishing copyright information integrated management system, providing various copyright management information, providing legal copyright works, evaluating values of copyright, establishing transparent digital clearing system, and fostering copyright information distributors. Next is main organization system of digital copyright exchange market. First, integrated copyright information management system used unique numbering system for distinguishing copyright of digital copyright works, ICN, to systematically manage creation, distribution, extinction of copyright works. Copyright license management system is copyright usage one-stop system, making use to have online access to information needed for using copyright, such as copyright works, copyright hold information, and so on. Also, it makes individual copyright holders and service providers to have easy conclusion of contracts by providing detailed information on usage. There are also several systems. KCC has ASEAN as medium in between these systems to manage as a whole. When this system is completed, right-hold organizations and service providers can save cost of collecting copyright information, reduce person in charges work expenses, and reduce copyright distribution service expenses. Use of digital contents get a reduced cost of collecting copyright information and accurate copyright information, and they could have easy access to legal copyright works. And when this copyright exchange market goes in stable stage, we would like to make connections with the concerned organizations abroad. First target would be Asian countries, including Japan and China, where many Korean contents are entered. And in the future, we plan to cooperate with other countries and international organizations like WIPO. Currently, part of this copyright exchange market is established and it is under operation. Right of music transmission is well of 60 million in 2 years. KCC is expanding business target to right of reduced right of performance. In future, KCC wants to expand our business target to other contents aside from music. Thank you for your divided attention.
Thank you, Mr. Jung. I would like to pass the word to Ms. Maricela Uman. She is Executive Director in Kenya Copyright Board in Nairobi, Kenya.
Thank you very much, Sajo. This is going to be quite difficult. I'm wondering how yesterday they managed to do it in 10 minutes. Now the shoe is on the other foot. I'll try and see if I can make it in 10 minutes. Okay. So one of the things is I think the advantage of being the third speaker is that I can ride on the presentations of the other two. My focus is going to be mainly in relation to research and educational institutions in Kenya, as we are looking at the whole system of the digital platform and the licensing regimes that are coming up. We all know that over the recent years that we've had various developments, that these have resulted in new licensing platforms, which may be used for research and for purposes of education. So basically, this paper examines the emerging licensing regimes based on the experience in Kenya in relation to research and education. You find that, one of the interesting things we have about our research and educational institutions is that for a very long time, we have relied a lot on hard copies of journals and material. So it's been quite difficult an effort to try and shift from that to the digital environment. So you find that the internet provides a wider access and dissemination of copyright works. There are various databases, both electronic journals, which are available over the digital networks. These resources, unfortunately, are not easily available to the users, especially in developing countries like Kenya. And this may be attributed to various reasons, such as limited access to these specific electronic resources. And this is exacerbated by the internet, the poor proliferation of the internet, prevailing policies and prohibitive costs of accessing these particular resources. Over the years, the collective management organizations have played quite an important role when you're dealing with the issues of licensing of both content within the digital and non-digital environment. Though as it stands right now, I think they're concentrating, as I said before, more on the non-digital environment. So once these works are uploaded, they have to be made available, and you find that there are many challenges that we face. You have various licensing schemes that have been in use, and one of them is probably which most of you know, and it's still applicable online, and this is basically the primary licenses. I'll just give you an example of one of the developments that we've been having in Kenya. This is something that was established in the year 2003, and this is what we call the Kenya Library and Information Service Consortium. So you find that the consortium draws its membership from the university libraries, research institutions, public and national libraries. Since its inception, it's based at the University of Nairobi Library and currently has 68 members, basically 7 of them public universities, 25 private universities, and 36 research and other institutions, including government agencies such as the Kenya Revenue Authority. The consortium negotiates for the licenses on behalf of the members, making it more affordable to access a wider electronic database. And, most information on this particular consortium can be found on their webpage. So you find that the research institutions and public universities encourage the deposit of research papers and academic publications within their libraries. This material may be accessed by other researchers and academics for reference purposes. Again, we have a small drawback in this particular area because you find that most of these works are actually deposited in hard copies. So that would mean that the various research institution and educational institutions would have to go through other processes to digitize and make this available online. You find that the demand for scientific literature in developing countries has gone unfulfilled for many years, with thousands of students, researchers, and academics struggling to gain access to this particular information. I think one of the big problems we have is that you have quite a bit of material that has been generated within the various universities and research institutions, but these cannot be accessed. Like, for instance, I don't know, this is a trend that's coming up. Most of the theses, both doctoral, the undergraduate, and the postgraduate documents, if I need to get anything from one of the universities in Nairobi, I have to go to the library, probably go to the reserve section and get a hard copy of it, which I cannot even leave the library with it. So you find that we still have those resources and the limitations in terms of access. So that is something that I think is something we can look into, and probably it's one of the things that we have to look into, new licensing schemes, especially within the digital environment, that would allow access. First of all, the digitization of these works and access. I think this is something that we've spoken about since yesterday. The keynote address was on basically Creative Commons. So you find that there are various licenses that are available, but the institutions in Kenya have been slow to take up on the Creative Commons, both to publish their works or access works that have been published under Creative Commons. I think in Africa, one of the countries that has taken up Creative Commons is South Africa, with its working unit within the University of Cape Town Intellectual Property Research Unit. So basically, they're creating specific licenses from the generic Creative Commons licenses. In preparation, on the issues of open access, I think we've had quite a number of few journals that have come up over the internet. One of them, probably I can give an example, is the East and Central African Journal of Pharmaceutical Sciences. This is an open access journal. Basically, the copyright works are reserved, but 3 issues are published every year, and I think the users have access to at least 3 of the journals, 3 of the materials free of charge. So you have African Journals Online. This is a web-based service that allows access for peer-reviewed African-published scholarly journals. It's a non-profit organization based in South Africa and currently hosts over 380 journals from 29 countries in Africa. So we think that open access that is peer-reviewed is normally not covered. You know, you find that not many other journals would cover that. So you find that just to be able to tap into these resources, especially for purposes and research and education, open access courtesy of journals like the African Journals Online is, I think, a system that is, good to improve access to research material and for purposes of education. There's also an increased demand and use for open source software. This is used by the Creative Commons to disseminate and provide access to copyright-protected works. I'm not going to go into the details of the open source, as that was discussed extensively yesterday. So you find that we have various challenges within the emerging licensing platforms. And you have a couple of cases whereby that although you find that there's this software that is available, the uptake, as I said, is very slow. I'm not too sure. We're still trying to figure out what exactly the issue is. Maybe it's just that we are so used to dealing with a particular type of software, and it will take a while before we get there. So in summary and in conclusion, I'd like to say that at the moment, as we stand right now, most of the universities are encouraging the use of open source, open access. For instance, in August this year, we had a workshop that was held by the African Institute for Capacity Development, one of the public universities known as the Jomo Kenyatta University of Agriculture and Technology. And during the workshop, the use of open access was emphasized, seeking to remove price and permission barriers that prevent knowledge from being shared. So you find that it provides unrestricted access to research materials to the benefit of research institutions. And I think in November this year, Kenyatta University, yet another public university, will be hosting a workshop basically specifically for the medical research as to how to disseminate information and provide access to this information. So there's need for the universities and research institutions to take advantage of these new licensing schemes to ensure that there is legitimate access to electronic databases and research as well as educational materials. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Marcella.
You were great on your time, less than 10 minutes. We're going right now to listen to Mr. Najib Al-Shorbaji, Director of the Department of Knowledge Management Sharing, World Health Organization, here in Geneva.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. And I appreciate this opportunity to be here in WIBO. It's my first time, actually, to be in this organization, but I have been in touch with the people in the organization for many, many years, being in the field for over 25 years. So it's a pleasure to be here. I work for the WHO, and WHO is, I'm sure you all know, is a UN agency that represents something like, or has a membership of something like 193 states. So what I'm saying and what I'm going to say actually represents the views of the organization as a secretariat for these member states. And whatever we do in our work actually is to support these member states to do their work in relation to health. One thing that I want to emphasize within this access to knowledge discussion is that in WHO Constitution, it is clearly stated that the extension to all people of the benefits of medical, psychological, and related knowledge is essential to the fullest attainment of health. Health is a human right, and access to knowledge is also a human right. So we wouldn't and we should not deprive people from accessing knowledge as a way to contribute to their well-being and to the advancement of their development as a result of any rule or any regulation. Rules, regulations, including copyright, intellectual property copyright, they are supposed to facilitate access to knowledge rather than become a limiting factor to that. And in the Constitution also, we say that informed opinion and active cooperation on the parts of the public are of the utmost importance in the improvement of the health of the people, which means without an informed opinion, without information, without that knowledge, we don't expect people actually to attain the full health and health for all people in all countries. So universal access to knowledge is embedded in the Constitution, and we fully support that, and we work with it. Now, WHO itself acts as a publisher of scientific and technical information. We hope and we wish to be able to produce some music at some point or produce some artistic arts, although we do, but at a very limited scale. But what we produce is actually scientific, technical material, health information, health education, health promotion material that we always hope to influence the decision-making, the research, and the development in countries.
And we do exercise copyright. We have our own rules. We have our own practices in copyright. And we have stated three specific objectives of the copyright as we practice it. It is to protect the reputation of the organization as a public health authority and ensure that the organization's aims, credibility, objectivity, and independence are not compromised. Number two, it's to safeguard the integrity of the organization's intellectual property against any use contrary to its principles, for example, the promotion of products, services, entities, or philosophies. And the third one is to ensure that organization retains the right to be identified as the source of information and to use its information again in the future in whatever... withdraw out of date or inaccurate information from circulation. We believe that information can kill if it's wrong information on a desk of a doctor or in the hand of a nurse or written on a medication in the hand of a citizen. So it's important to make sure that information is always up to date and it's actually evidence-based and it is based on the most recent development. We provide access to our information. We don't have any restriction on that. So we provide public access. We ensure unrestricted public access to all our materials published on the website and the websites of WHO, not only, of course, WHO headquarters. We have six regional offices and we have a number of specialized centers. In addition to that, of course, we distribute most of our printed materials free of charge, particularly in developing countries. We sell some of our publications, but at a very reduced rate. The other thing that I want to talk about is how we reuse and allow for reusing and licensing our publications and our information products. We do encourage the use of information that we produce for research, education, and use by governments, but not for the promotion of product services or entities or any of these. So we are very strict about that. If it's a government using the material to develop a guideline or to develop a manual or to develop a training material, we don't have any problem with that. When it comes to using that material to promote specific drug or specific medication or specific piece of equipment, then we have problems with that. We do our publishing in six official languages: Arabic, Chinese, English, French, Russian, and Spanish. In addition to that, we provide licensing or support for translation into more than 40 languages by local institutions and publishers in member countries. We never say no to an institution or a country wanting to translate or wanted to adapt any of our publications to their all needs. And by that, actually, we encourage adaptation. We encourage localization of the published materials as long as they keep in the spirit and in the evidence that is provided in these publications. We do publish and we license our electronic content to a wide range of commercial and non-commercial partners to reach as broad an audience as possible. And we have agreements and works with the organization which is called, or the institution, Reproduction Rights Organizations. For future developments, we hope we will be able to openly publish and make our material openly accessible and reusable to continue applying or to continue applying the principles of that reuse and sticking to the rights of the organization. We do publish, as part of our scheme, actually, our own scientific publications, but also we encourage our staff to publish in what is called commercial publications, journals that people pay for their subscriptions, or in open source, open access journals. We did have actually exactly the same kind of discussion that the professor from Argentina has mentioned. Our staff, who are funded by public money, they do publish in journals, in publications, and in many cases we have to pay
subscription to these journals. So this debate actually is going on in the organization, and we have a recognition that something has to be done in that sense. How do we do it? It's a matter actually of reaching agreement with individual publishers, with some of these journals, but I think there is a need to establish a better global mechanism for doing that, to ensure that whatever we invest in the public sector comes back to the public sector in some way. We have opened access to our statistical data, which means that people can go to the website of WHO and extract data and use it the way they would like to see. Of course, there is a lot of work still to do in the metadata and in the way that we describe our data collected from different countries. When it comes to open licensing initiatives, which we think could provide a mechanism for archiving, there are many open licensing mechanisms, including what was mentioned yesterday, and we are seriously looking and working with WIPO on how we can make use of that. We don't have our own, actually, specific mechanism for joining the Creative Commons, but we would like to be part of that. The last point that I want to make in my sort of formal talk is actually WHO working as a broker in relation or between member states and the publishers, commercial publishers in particular. And I'm really proud to say that over the last 6-7 years, we have been able to develop what is called a public partner, public-private partnership with over a few hundred, actually, publishers in an initiative which is called HINARI. Health Information Network Access to Research Information. And by that, actually, we have over 7,000 health science and medical journals that are open free of charge or at a very low cost to 109 countries in the developing world, including most countries in Africa, many countries in Latin America and in Asia. And the way the system works, actually, is that according to a certain criteria, we have this list of countries and they register, and then they start accessing these collective journals. So it is not limited, actually, to a type of institution, except for commercial and for industrial organizations. We are not opening that, but it's for non-profit, it's for the government, it's for research, it's for universities. And from the experience that we have had, actually, this has contributed to the research in many of these countries. We have statistics actually showing the impact of access to this knowledge in terms of quality of publications from these countries and the number of publications. And the way it works, actually, WHO does not actually get any money. We don't pay any money. It is actually a relation that we manage between the consortium, between these different publishers and the member states that are entitled or qualified to benefit from this this initiative. The last 2-3 points that I just want briefly to touch upon is I have heard a number of people asking WIPO to become the lead in this particular area and to have a lead role in all that. And I fully support that. I think WIPO has a great responsibility to develop some global approaches which can then be adaptable at national level. And that's the way that we would like as UN agencies to think on behalf and with the member states and work with the industry, work with the different partners to develop approaches which then can be used or localized or adapted in member states. The other point that I want to make is related to the internet. I hope and I wish that the internet does not become an additional barrier to access to knowledge. We know that in Africa there is only or less than 4% of the population who have access to the internet. In Korea, we know with what our colleague has said that Korea is now starting actually to put limitations on the use of internet. They don't want people to continue their life and spend all their time on the internet. They would like to limit access to the internet. So we have this paradox. Huge population in the world, huge communities, they don't have access to the internet, and one community, one country, Korea or Finland or Canada or all these countries, they have a lot of access and they are trying to limit that. We are seeking universality. We are trying to see how we can equalize, how we can make the world more equal in terms of access to knowledge as a factor to improve quality and for development. The last point that I thought of sharing with you in relation to yesterday's discussion, I think when we mix or when we equate free access versus paid access, open access versus closed access, there are a number of terminologies, a number of concepts actually that we have to take care of, because sometimes it's free but not necessarily open access or open source. Sometimes it's an open source software, but you have to invest and you have to pay. Sometimes it's a commercial software, but you get it free of charge because of certain arrangement at a local level. The last point that I want to make, which I don't want to spend any time actually, is that WHO and WIPO is working very hard on the intellectual property in health, and that relates to patents, that relates to licensing of drugs, of medicine, and all that. But I don't want actually to talk about that so that we don't mix medicines with music and with all other types of things. Thank you very much.
We all thank you very much, Mr. Shorbaji. We are now listening to Ms. Hala Esalmavi, Principal Attorney and IPR Officer, Biblioteca Alexandrina, the New Library of Alexandria, Alexandria. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning. I'm really happy to be with all those respectful speakers and participants. It's really a good opportunity to discuss a lot of things. And today I came to tell you my own experience, in fact. And the views I'm expressing here, I'm sure that they are my own views and not necessarily the views of my organization or any other organization I'm affiliated with. So we've been talking for yesterday and today about the challenges and the concept of the normal people who are not specialized in intellectual property and copyright, what the people understand copyright. And in fact, I had a very interesting experience in the last few months because I was invited as a speaker to explain what's copyright and what we're doing in the library in this area, as I'm the project lead of the Access to Knowledge and the Creative Commons project. So I went around between Alexandria and Cairo in many universities, and I was really shocked how people understand intellectual property. 3, 4, 5 years ago, people, they didn't understand anything about intellectual property. But now, what they understand, intellectual property, especially copyright, this is what we're talking about, is restrictions. It's not to access. It's not to copy. It's all the negative words you can ever imagine. And then when I explain to them, no, the system should be balanced. And it's legal to copy in a certain, and even you can have your own private copy. They said, no, this is not what we are practicing. And it's moreover, the problems is now many of the library universities, they don't allow the researchers and students to copy any pages. Not even a very limited, not any pages. This is one. And also sometimes you're not even allowed to borrow the book because we have very limited copies, so you're not allowed to copy the book. So how we can work? And this is really a real concern. Another problem directly we are facing as a library, and I'll just give you two examples. There are many, in fact. But only one. What about the out-of-print copies? Some, we have very precious books that were printed 20, 30, 50 years ago, but they are out of print. And our patrons came to us asking for those books, but we don't have a copy. But we know that we can get a copy and we can digitize those copies and put them available at least in situ, in our premises. So we went to the right holders and we asked them, and unfortunately, some of the stubborn classic right holders said, no. Why? In all cases, you're not getting any revenues of those out-of-print copies. Why saying no? Because it's my property. Why? That's it. No further discussion. And anyway, the discussion was really, in a certain moment, sometimes was really ugly, but this is the situation. Another thing, and I don't want to go in details because I know the next session will be about orphan works, but orphan works also is another problem. So, in fact, If we think about intellectual property and copyright, it's getting a problem in the digital age, and I believe the system as it is now in the digital age and Bern system is really kind of failing. And I'd like to read with you, and I'd like to quote Mr. Gari last year in the general opening statement assemblies of the member states of WIPO, Geneva, 22nd of September 2009. I'm quote, "The evidence suggested that the current means are suffering severe stress. In the case of music, for example, according to industry estimations, 40 billion files of music were illegally file shared on the internet in 2008, a piracy rate of 95%. Oh, wow, 95%. If these numbers is right, so the problem is not of the users. The problem is in the system. Now, I need anyone that studied law or even didn't study law, give me an example that any legal system that is failing, that is pirated or violated by 95%. This is really amazing. So this means that this system is not amusing or not fulfilling the needs of both sides, right holders and the user. Both of us are not happy. So come on, let's think about something. And in fact, some will say, oh, enforcement. I don't know what this means. Okay, because I also can say enforcement, at least enforcement for the exceptional limitation. This never, ever I heard anyone saying, let's enforce the exceptional limitation. Enforcement always about protection and more protection. And in fact, this is not the solution. And also the solution is not about issuing reports and having lists and priority lists and watch lists and all this. This is not the solution. In fact, we need to work together. It's very bad to say we're not working together. You have two teams, and there are conflict interests. I believe, at least in the area of education and research, this shouldn't be the issue. And if I may suggest a solution or something we can get out of this, I know that now there are many discussions about new tools and new instruments, but maybe this is for the long-term plan. However, now what we can think about is activating what the provisions we have already for the exceptional limitation for education and research. Let's again think about the Bern's three-step test. It's very flexible. Let's think about the fair use concept, and it's very flexible. Maybe this can help us for the time being. Also, it's very bad practice to use the contract law to make the users and the libraries and the intermediary and the university and educational institution to waive their own rights on the exception and limitation that are embedded in the copyright law. This is another very bad practice. In fact, and also we may say that, as it was said before, the promotion of the alternatives, not the copyright system now, because this is. We can't do it for now, but the alternative to access and disseminate knowledge. Yes, we need more awareness and talk more about open access, about the Creative Commons and other initiatives. And luckily, in our Arab region and in Egypt, we are already working on the Creative Commons, and in a few weeks we'll have our Creative Commons license, the Egyptian Creative Commons license, and I believe the Jordanian also is ready, and the Lebanese are working on theirs. So this is also another thing we can work on it. So another thing I was thinking about, in fact, when it comes to research and education, we shouldn't interpret the copyright law according to the needs of the entertainment business. This, because research and education is not a trade-related topic. It's not at all a trade-related topic, and this is how we studied it. Because copyright and our concept, it's droit d'auteur or author's rights. It was always belonged to the civil law. And the industrial property belongs to the commercial law. So this is something, and this is another thing. And, of course, authors and the creator, they have rights. moral and financial rights. However, this shouldn't be an obstacle for research and education. And my last word, as we're here in WIPO, and I really think that WIPO in the last year started to do more balanced events, and we can, as users, advocates, we can talk more freely. So I'm really inviting WIPO to organize more and more balanced events, and maybe in the technical assistance program, maybe there should be talk about both the exceptional limit, the rights of both, the rights of the users and the rights of the right holders. And I believe if we do this, maybe for the time being, there will be some solving the stress that Mr. Gary talked about. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We are short in time. I think we have only 20 minutes to go. So I'm not going to ask any question. I would like to ask the audience if you have questions. So please.
Thank you. Flavio Rosemena, Head of Copyrights in Ecuador. I have a question for Marisela and for Hala. I think this is another excellent example of why we just cannot treat IP as another type of private property. I mean, there are just too many public interests at play. Do you believe that this case, the education case, is another area where an international standard of minimum limitations and exceptions is needed? And I say international standard, it can be a treaty or some kind of instrument, because it's the only way that you can harmonize, all the limitations and exceptions in this particular area and take full advantage of it. Again, I'm talking about minimum limitations and exceptions. Just as we have right now minimum rights to have minimum limitations that I can expect from every country that adheres to the international instrument, whether it's a treaty or some other type of instrument. Thank you.
This question specifically to anybody?
I believe I said Marisela and Hal, Ms. Hal.
Thank you very much, Flavio. One of the things that I think we needed to emphasize is that, yes, I think based on a research that was done recently within 8 African countries, we found that the issue of education, access to education and teaching learning materials is something that is very important. One of the main problems that we have, and I think a study across that and many other countries within Africa and I think the Latin America, you find that the exceptions and limitations are very limited. So you find that we hardly have anything in relation to educational materials. So most of the time they have to go ahead and use the licensing schemes, which is very different from what you have probably in the EU with their list of exceptions and limitations within the InfoSoc directive. And under that, you have very specific issues that relate to education. And I think even in the US, they have very specific issues addressing education, issues of education, and at least giving more leverage to access to this material. So I do think, yes, if we can actually work towards having, I'm not too sure whether you'd say a minimum standard or basically to work towards something that would help the developing countries and those who have very strict exceptions or who have very little limitations in relation to, I mean, access to education, we could have an instrument that would actually be able to set what is acceptable, the minimum acceptable to help. I know in your country you have very, I'm not too sure whether you even have that particular provision to allow for use for research and education. So I think one of the problems we had is that in our national laws we already had very narrowly construed exceptions, limitations, and access. So it's something that we are working on, and I think it's something that we need to address probably within the SCCR and other international fora to try and see how best we can deal with these particular issues.
Okay. I believe you mean on the international level, the minimum. So, in fact, I have my own views on this. What about if we have a treaty, even if we have a legislation, doesn't mean that we will enforce this and this will be happening in the real world. So what I believe is, yes, okay, good for those who are working in this, and they should work in this. But, however, what I would like to stress, we need more awareness about what we already have in our system. We need to activate it. They are already there, some of the provisions, and they may solve many of our problems. So this can be go parallel with this. Okay, those are working on a new treaty and for a minimum level of exception limitation. This is really great. However, if we already in 1 year or 10 years got those treaty on reality, this doesn't mean, especially in our developing world, that they will be applied. So I believe we discussed this before, because people, they don't understand there are exceptional limitations. And I'm talking about professors and researchers and PhD students. I'm not talking about undergraduate students. So this is more important, that we talk more and people should understand the system should be balanced and there are exceptional limitations and activate what we already have.
Ректор Российского государственного института интеллектуальной собственности. Уважаемые коллеги, мы много говорим о проблемах.
I'm from the Russian Institution on copyright. We have spoken about many problems today with respect to authors' rights and internet. And there's a very interesting subject that we're discussing today, access to education. And I'm addressing all panelists today. Do you not think, and I'm also asking the rapporteur, do you not think that it would not be a good idea to have a solution to this problem, to find a compromise solution between the user and author? Yesterday, we had an excellent example concerning mineral water, but you have to realize that mineral water is not obtained from the tap. Cost is involved, and the teacher doesn't get his knowledge from the all-powerful. It's through work, and this work should be remunerated in one way or another. And it's my view that it is indispensable to think about the way we can develop these interests of the community, the interests of the user with respect to access to knowledge, and the interests of the professor, of the scientist. Of course, there are some cases where learned people decide to disseminate their knowledge, and there's free access to his knowledge. But sometimes that person thinks about possible compensation or remuneration, and he does not have the possibility of providing the fruit of his knowledge in more than, say, 10 copies, whereas on internet, many more copies can be made available. So I think that we should make recommendations to WIPO so that a mechanism of this type can be elaborated soon. I'd like to know your opinion about this. Thank you.
Yeah, it is understanding. It is understandable that those that produce knowledge want to be rewarded for that. But the reason that we slightly changed the order and I wanted to introduce the topic is to emphasize the fact that many, in some countries, most of the production has been already paid by the same society, which is, I think, is the part that the argument misses. Clearly, it is true that a scientist wants to be rewarded for his effort. That's the reason that normally the university is paying a salary, or the research institution salary, that is normally paid by the taxpayers. So the situation that we are talking about And of course, somebody may argue well, that will only apply to publicly funded research. In most countries, it's most of it. In some countries, it's all of it. So I think that we can talk in general because we are talking about the majority of the situation. I fully agree with Hala when she refers a system have to be measured for what the majority is doing, and of course allowing the exceptions. I mean, I'm not supporting some sort of totalitarian system that minorities have nothing to say. But the majority is the one that should be used to set the standard. And it seems that in most countries, the standard is that the public already has paid for it. Just to support your view that if 95% of people are doing something, probably the 5% is the wrong one. Probably. So I'm not saying that it is, but probably. They always have a Galileo that shows us different, but just probably.
I don't think the problem is between the authors and the professors and the students. I think it's the middleman that is the problem. I think it's the publishers who take care of this, managing this relation between the authors, the creators, and the consumers, quote unquote. Because I've never seen in my life any business case for any author who said, as of today, I would like to become an author and my business plan is to publish or to create 2 books per year to get this amount of money. We as authors, as researchers, as scientists and all that, the most important thing is actually to communicate what we know to our peers, to colleagues, to students, to researchers and so on. And then after we grow a little bit and become more famous, more cited and all that, we capture the attention of a publisher. And then the business comes. And I just want very shortly to cite the example. It's not in education, but it's in literature. The author of the series Harry Potter. There was an interview with her probably 3-4 weeks ago in which she said, the way I started writing actually is because I had a personal agony or disaster as a result of the death of her mother. So she wrote the first one, and then you can see that Harry Potter is making money for her, millions. So authors do not actually start to do business. They start to do work that help in communicating their ideas. But then it's somebody else actually who comes. That somebody else has to be regulated somehow. That business has to be regulated in a way to facilitate both the mission of the author to communicate with people, to express ideas and to share these ideas for the benefit of humanity. And, of course, for that, who is running the business, printing or distributing or selling or whatever, also to make business. But it should not be one on the expense of the other. There has to be a balance. There has to be a way through some kind of global agreement, some kind of special licensing for students, student editions. I know that some of the computer companies, actually, they do provide licensing for student use, for school use. So there is actually a way to do it, except that we are not probably fully aware of these ways, plus we are not actually fully informed by the publishers on what would be the best alternatives to do a cost-effective or a reduced cost or a cheap or a free way of accessing knowledge. Thank you.
We already have 3 people who want to speak. So I think it would be better if we listen to the questions and then answered all of them, because it would be faster. So first this elegant lady here, then the young man over there, and then the gentleman over there, please.
Chairman, I'm Magdalena Vinen, president of IFRO. IFRO is a federation of reproduction rights organization worldwide. We have 128 members in the world. And we promote the legal access to the content while preserving the rights of authors and publishers. Well, I am very interested in your debate, and I am not making a question. I only state that what we try to promote in all international organizations, in the European Commission, here at WIPO, are stakeholders' platforms, because we think that is the only way or the best way to reach this balance that is needed for everybody, for users to have an easy access to content, and for rights holders to have the necessary revenue to continue create and invest in new products. Otherwise, well, the content will not be so updated, so accurate, so well indexed as all researchers, teachers, and professors need. This is our vision of this matter. Thank you.
Hi. The two of us can.
Hi, my name is Thirubala Subramaniam with the NGO Knowledge Ecology International, and I had a question for Dr. Shubhaji from the World Health Organization. You mentioned the Hinari Initiative, and I was wondering if countries such research institutions in countries such as India, Indonesia, Pakistan, and China were eligible for this Hinari Initiative, and if not, I was wondering if you could tell me why not.
Thank you. Very quickly, I'm not sure about Indonesia, actually, but I'm sure about India and Pakistan. They don't have access to the initiative. And that is because, I'm sure Indonesia as well, that is because these countries and another huge list of countries, as I said, it's only 109 countries that have access. So there are many, many countries that do not have. And it's probably unfortunate that we have to, when we worked out the criteria with the publishers as a public-private partnership, we had to use the World Bank categorization of countries. So we have a group of countries that the GNP is less than $1,000 US dollar, so they get actually completely free of charge access to 7,000 medical and health science journals. The other countries that is the GNP is less than 3,000 actually, the research institutions get access at a price of 1,000 US dollar per year per institution. So India, Indonesia, Pakistan, Egypt, Lebanon, many of the countries, Brazil, they actually, if you look at the GNP, they fall under these categories. But also the publishers apply other criteria, including the size of business that they have inside these countries. So when they see that in India or Indonesia or Pakistan, they have so much of business inside that country, they hesitate, or they are still actually worried that if they provide free of charge, they will lose that business. So we are trying to work a third model, actually. It's not totally free. It's not small payment, but there is a payment at some point. But in these countries, we do encourage what is being done in Kenya, that they create local consortium for access to these journals, and we help them in negotiating the deals with these publishers somehow. Thank you.
Questions one after. We could answer them very, very fast.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Victoriano Colodron from Rights Direct. Rights Direct is the recently established European subsidiary of the American organization Copyright Clearance Center. I would like to share some information. I'm not going to ask a question, but to share some information about the licensing needs of a specific kind of private research entities, such as multinational corporations in industries with a strong research component, which typically are very heavy users of scientific, technical, and medical journals and other text works. The employees of these multinational corporations, no matter in which country subsidiary they are based, usually need to be able to reuse and share text materials of their interest across boundaries in a lawful and seamless way. And just to inform you of this latest development that Rights Direct represents, we have started to try and meet the needs of these multinational corporations in Europe with a fully voluntary, non-exclusive, multi-territory licensing scheme through which we grant secondary rights for different digital reuses of millions of titles of STM journals, press, magazines, and books, both in print and out of print, both printed and electronic. And this is a license that Copyright Clearance Center has been offering in the United States for some 10 years now, and that we are bringing to Europe now. I just wanted to share this latest development. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Oh, it's my turn, is it? Yeah. Okay.
Microphone, please.
Yeah, the gentleman over there at the end of the room.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
The room. I'm sorry. We are out of time.
A quick comment and a question. My comment, I would like to point out a contradiction in Professor Barrio's remarks when he says that users pay twice for the same. That is just simply not true. One is the price of the research. The other is, as he himself pointed out, the price for the work of the publisher to aggregate the content, select the content, the added value given to it. So I just wanted, I think, to point out this very important point. And my question, also noting that no rights holders are on the panel, but nevertheless, a question to the panel, would it not be time to make better use of initiatives like HINARI, which is part of a broader project, Research for Life, also involving a range of other publications with other UN agencies, as well as appropriate exceptions and limitations, which, as has been said, exist and can be enacted under the current system, as opposed to having a very theoretical debate about the fundamentals of copyright.
To everybody else, because we don't have time, I just want panelists to end up commenting the comments and questions, please. We have 3 minutes.
Well, I will just say one minute. I think the best model that can be applied, actually, is the Research for Life that has just been mentioned, which WHO is leading with FAO and with the UNEB, in which health science information, scientific technical journals, environmental health, and agriculture. And that is the basic, actually, for human development, environment, health, and agriculture. If that model can expand to cover other topics and include other more countries and include more content and include more better ways of doing that, I think that's the model that we should all go and we should really encourage, because it's the model that is working, at least in the countries that are eligible, and we are adding to it actually other activities, including training on research, including training on production of publications, translation, research methodology, and so on. So I think this is the kind of model that we would like to endorse and support, by which there is public-private partnership for the sake and support of member states. Thank you.
No?
I think that there is a point that I made. I said that publishing was extremely necessary. However, there is a misunderstanding of what they are paying twice. I mean, the people who are paying research, they are paying because they are thinking about the public good that comes out. And they have to pay to access the knowledge. The process for them is irrelevant. It's important to us because we need promotion. So we need to show that it was published in a proper place with a peer review. But for the people who are paying the research, that is irrelevant. And that is my point. That's the reason I say we have to find a different way, because the publisher today is absolutely necessary to do that. But still, the people are paying twice because they are paying for the research and they are paying to access. Here, the process of whether we print it or not, especially when the price of publishing becomes close to zero, it's not true that it's zero. Yesterday, they were talking about zero transaction cost. It's not zero. Just as William Patry left, the Google electricity bill, and you will see how zero it is, the cost. But it is not zero, but it's close to zero. And therefore, they could access that knowledge without all these intermediaries. If we find publishers and producers, we find a way that we have a proper business model for the publishers and also a way that people can access the knowledge which is behind the research, not the actual journal, which for them is plainly irrelevant. That was my point, but that I agree that they are still necessary.
Alan wants to know. So I thank everybody for being here, and we move on to next panel. Thank you very much.